Harold. This morning we have Professor Rose before our microphone. Professor Rose is head of our Department of Biochemistry at the university. Last year he was distinguished by the fact that he was awarded the first Osborne Mendel Award for his work in the field of nutrition. There's no question but that diets and nutrition, of course, are very important to all of us, to every one of us. His particular efforts, of course, had to do with a field, or rather the particular compound known as a protein. Now, what other substances besides proteins make up our diet, Professor Rose?
In addition to proteins, one must have an adequate intake of vitamins and certain minerals, and must receive a sufficient intake of calories, which are ordinarily consumed in the form of carbohydrates and fats.
Well, now, you mentioned proteins as one of the important constituents. Just what are proteins? I mean, what are they made up of, Professor Rose?
Proteins are the nitrogenous materials that occur widespread in all living cells. They are tremendous molecules and are made up of about 20 substances which we call amino acids.
Now, Dr. Rose, you said something about tremendous molecules and made up of about 20 different amino acids. Now, how large are these protein molecules? Can you give us some idea about that?
Generally, chemists refer to molecular size in terms of what we call molecular weights. I can give you some idea of the relative size of proteins and, say, an amino acid. The average molecular weight of amino acids is about 150. Now, it requires anywhere from 100 to 200 such molecules of amino acids to make even a simple protein. And sometimes the number may rise to 100,000 of these building blocks in order to construct a complex protein.
You mean to tell me that the food which contains a protein in it is actually composed of a tremendously complex structure that whose average weight compared with the essential constituent which we need is somewhere of the neighborhood of 100,000 weight units? That's simply amazing, Professor Rose. Now, you've used the term amino acids several times. 20 amino acids is comprising proteins. Just what are these amino acids?
Amino acids are acids which carry the nitrogen in a form which can be utilized by the animal organism. This is the chief form in which nitrogen is built up into our tissues.
I see. Now, what about these amino acids and these proteins? Where are they found generally in nature?
They're found widespread in many foods, particularly animal foods. Milk, meat, and eggs are rich in proteins. Smaller amounts occur in many vegetables, notably beans and peas.
I see. Well, those, of course, are the useful constituents that we use in our body. But you told me a little while ago that these proteins also exist in certain other constituents that are present in the body or that are found in nature.
Yes, it's a curious fact that you can combine these amino acids not only to make the food proteins, but you can generate, or the animal body can generate, certain proteins that take on new functions, namely what we call enzymes that are capable of breaking down other proteins. Or we can transform in our bodies these 20 amino acids into substances known as hormones, which control many of the body reactions. It's astounding how many different proteins one can make out of just 20 building blocks.
Yes, now, Dr. Rose, are all of these safe materials to have within our system? Now, of course, we know that hormones are, and that, let's say, the other group of materials that you mentioned, in addition to hormones, the
enzymes,
of course, they're necessary. Now, are there materials which, let's say, would be disadvantageous so far as good living is concerned if they were also manufactured in the body?
Yes, there are certain processes in plants, particularly, whereby toxic proteins are generated. The toxic material in poisonous mushrooms, for instance, is a relatively simple protein composed of these same amino acids, but combined in such a way as to impart toxic properties.
Well, now, are the viruses combinations of such amino acids as too?
Yes, viruses responsible for many diseases, both in plants and animals, are proteins, complex proteins.
Well, that's very interesting. Here, on the one hand, we have the important constituents of food built up into a protein molecule, which is useful for us. And on the other hand, we find that these same essential amino acids, these nitrogenous compounds that you have worked with, that those materials are capable of being combined in still another form to give us toxic materials, poisons, viruses, and the like. Well, Dr. Rose, how did you happen to become interested in amino acids as a biochemist?
Well, as a biochemist, I was anxious to find out which amino acids can be manufactured by the body and which cannot. Obviously, if we cannot manufacture amino acids, then we must consume them in a preformed state.
Well, now, of course, that's a very fine hypothesis, but now how do you go about experimentally determining which are the materials, the amino acids that are introduced in our foods, and which are manufactured by the body? After all, there must be a story in back of this.
In order to answer that question, I must call your attention to the fact that a growing animal will only grow if he receives everything that he needs to manufacture new cells or new tissues. Now, if you formulate a diet in which proteins are replaced by mixtures of purified amino acids, but supply, in addition to these amino acids, the carbohydrates and the fats and the inorganic minerals and the vitamins, then if the animal receives all he needs, he'll continue to grow. If he doesn't, he'll fail to grow.
In other words, you're carrying out experimental tests with the principal constituents, which are obtained from the protein by some kind of a bodily process, and then trying to determine which of these, if it were absent, might not result in satisfactory growth of the animal. Well, in other words, you're setting up synthetic or experimental diets under the circumstances. Now, one of the things that you have accomplished here at the university, of course, is to isolate a new one of these amino acids. I think you gave it the name, christened it threonine. How did you happen to discover that, let's say, that this particular amino acid is necessary in a diet?
Many years ago, when we were trying to formulate a synthetic diet that would meet the animal requirements, we formulated one in which all known amino acids were included. We expected the animals receiving this diet to grow, but instead of growing, they lost weight and eventually died. This led us to believe that proteins furnished something which was not present in our mixture of amino acids. A search was therefore undertaken in proteins to find this missing component.
Well, now, how do you go about experimentally finding this missing link in the group of amino acids that are so necessary for our well-being?
The story is a rather complex one, but in principle, it involves the decomposition, the breakdown of that protein into its component amino acids.
Now, you do that just the same way, let's say, that the body does it by, let's say, external means? Is that what you mean?
We use acids instead of these unique proteins called enzymes that the body employs. But the overall result is the same. You have a mixture of amino acids when you boil the protein with acids under certain standard conditions.
Well, now, after you've got that mixture, Dr. Rose, what do you do with it then?
Then we have certain chemical techniques that enable us to divide these 20 amino acids into groups, each group of which was then tested for this unknown substance.
In other words, you've used a chemical method for separating this decomposed mixture of proteins into the amino acids. You've used the chemical methods to set up different groups, and then you use those different products then in synthetic diets again.
Yes,
is that the idea?
Yes, that's right.
Well, and I suppose the story was what, Dr. Rose?
The story was that only one of these groups of amino acids would stimulate the growth of the animal. That led us to follow up the study and divide the members of that group. And finally, we isolated in a pure form this new substance, which we named threonine.
Yes, now you mentioned feeding 19 different amino acids. This makes 20 altogether then, does it not?
That's right.
Are all these 20 amino acids required for healthy growth and well-being of animals?
No, that was the problem which we were interested in and which we have been investigating for a number of years. After threonine had been added to the mixture of 19, giving a mixture of 20, now the animals would grow perfectly well. And so it was a relatively simple process to drop each amino acid out of the diet one at a time and determine whether it influenced the rate of gain of the subject.
Well, now the question still is, Dr. Rose, how many are actually needed by the animal?
For the growing animal, 10 are required. In other words, 10 cannot be manufactured out of materials the animal ordinarily has in his food at rates commensurate with the rate of gain.
Well, now, that's all well and good, these animal tests, but of course we're interested in what it's going to do for us here, Dr. Rose. Are these same 10 amino acids also needed for our well-being? I mean, must they be in our diet?
That was the next step in our program. In other words, to see whether the same number, or the same particular 10, were required by the human subject. For this purpose, we obtained volunteers among the graduate students in biochemistry who agreed to go on diets of this same general sort, containing carbohydrates, fats, minerals, and vitamins, and mixtures of amino acids.
Well, now, did you map growth curves for these volunteers of yours, too?
No, since they are adults, we had to employ another technique, which the biochemist frequently uses, namely the principle of nitrogen equilibrium. By that we mean that if a diet carries everything that an individual needs, the intake of nitrogen will equal the output. On the other hand, if there's something missing from his diet that he requires, then the output exceeds the intake.
I see.
By that procedure, we were able to determine, after dropping out single amino acids, whether that particular thing was necessary or whether it could be manufactured by the human cell.
Now, how many amino acids does the human being require then, Dr.
For the maintenance of nitrogen balance, only 8 of these amino acids, instead of 10, as in the growing animal, are required. However, one must bear in mind that the growing child might also require 10. No such experiments have yet been conducted upon children.
Well, now, what are the 8 amino acids? I think our radio listeners might be interested in knowing what these substances are.
They have technical chemical names, which are valine, leucine, isoleucine, methionine, threonine, phenylalanine, tryptophan, and lysine.
Well, Dr. Rose, there's just one more question now that I'd like to ask you. Does the ordinary diet which we use, or which we partake of, furnish us enough of each of these 8 amino acids so that we thrive and live well?
Yes, we have been able to determine exactly how much of each of these 8 is needed by the adult man. And the indications are that we will always have an abundance in our diet because of their widespread distribution in the foods we consume.
In other words, these 8 amino acids are obtainable in large enough quantities in the normal diet that we consume every day so that we don't have to worry about them. Of course, we do have to worry about certain other things such as carbohydrates and fats. Those are the energy fuels that you've
mentioned and
earlier.
More especially the vitamins and the minerals we must watch.
But I see.
The amino acid requirements are so small and these compounds are so widely distributed in nature that it's not likely that anyone in this country would ever experience an amino acid deficiency.
Well, thank you very much for an extremely interesting discussion of your work in the field of nutrition. I'm sure that all of us, the whole world, in fact, has profited by the outstanding researches which you have accomplished here at the University of Illinois. Great pleasure to have had you with us this morning on the microphone.
The story of amino acids is just one of the many fascinating stories dealing with scientific research and study being carried on constantly at the University of Illinois. Each week at this time, Lou Audrieth has as his guest one of the people engaged in some phase of this work. Next week, our guest will be Dr. Carl S. Marvel, professor of organic chemistry, who will tell us about the latest developments in synthetic rubber. Another story of science and people. This is the University of Illinois Radio Service.